The best-kept secret for luxury and safety? Volvo. The best-kept secret to obtain a Volvo? Howard Orloff Volvo Cars. Howard Orloff Volvo has been proudly serving Chicagoland for over 55 years. And did you know, at Howard Orloff Volvo, during Volvo's Sweden's Greetings Holiday Sales event, you can get special year-end pricing, finance, and lease offers on all remaining 2017 models. And did you know, you can lease a new 2017 Volvo S90 T6 for $469 a month for 36 months with no down payment, or buy for $47,988. Plus, come in and experience the exciting all-new 2018 Volvo XC60. Isn't it time you get to know Howard Orloff Volvo Cars? Visit Howard Orloff Volvo, just off the Kennedy at Armitage, or online at howardorloffvolvo.com.
Demonstrator, stock number V02835. First month's payment plus tax, title, license, and doc fee due at signing with approved credit. No security deposit. See dealer for details.
This segment was brought to you by Exergen Temporal Scanner. Thermometer, still taking your child's temperature the way it was done decades ago? Upgrade to the Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer. The Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer, available at fine retailers everywhere.
Earnings vary based on...
Champagne is a must for every holiday party. Not just any bottle will do. Celebrate in style and good taste with Tattinger Champagne. Known for its excellent taste and quality, Tattinger will impress your friends and family this holiday season. From Brut Le Francais to Prestige Rosé to Comte de Champagne, you'll find your perfect taste. Whether you're the host of the party, a guest, or just planning a quiet celebration at home, Tattinger is the ideal choice. Purchase Tattinger Champagne at Chicagoland Grocery and Fine Wine and Spirits retailers this holiday season. It's Tattinger time.
I just saved hundreds of dollars by switching to Geico. I've never felt more alive.
Disclaimer, Geico cannot guarantee you will feel more alive. You either possess functioning respiratory and circulatory systems, or you do not, or you are a zombie. If you are indeed a brain-starved zombie and you would like to save money on car insurance, the Geico legal team applaud your excellent life choices, even in your shambling afterlife. But we strongly encourage you to visit geico.com or download the Geico app. Please stay a minimum of 500 feet away from our large and presumably delicious, delicious brains.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Thanks for streaming The Score. Who is 670 The Score? We're Chicago's original sports talk station. Chicago's only all-Chicago sports talk station, covering all of Chicago's teams. And when breaking Chicago sports news happens, we'll break in with all the details. Guaranteed. Keep streaming The Score to your computer or device for the best sports talk in Chicago. We are Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
Thanks for streaming The Score. Chicago Sports Radio 670.
Mully and Hanley mornings 5 to 9 a.m.
This is quarterback development. This is what it looks like. You have guys struggle. You're going to have points where you think the guy's a bust. You're going to have points where you're like, it's just not, the light hasn't come on. And then hopefully it's going to be the third year. It's not going to be next year because presumably you're not going to be in the same scheme or have the same guy around him.
Mully and Hanley mornings 5 to 9 a.m. on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Thanks for streaming The Score. Chicago Sports Radio 670.
Matt Spiegel and Danny Parkins. Middays on The Score.
I remain convinced that that kid can be great.
So
that,
do I.
But this is who they have. And in no way is the book written on Mitch Trubisky. It's stupid to say so. If anybody's out there saying it, there's still absolutely a chance that he can be great.
Still would bet on good quarterbacks.
So would I.
Spiegel and Parkins. 9 a.m. to 1. On Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
You're listening to Chicago's original sports talk station. Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago.
Welcome back, my friend, to the show that never ends.
Never ends.
The Bernstein and Golf Show.
With Hub Arkish and Anthony Heron in for Dan and Jason.
The first time we went to Europe and some random man just appears out of nowhere. There's like a puff of smoke and he just sort of slides in front of the table.
It was Chef Gusteau from Ratatouille.
Remy, what are you waiting for?
Is this going to become a regular thing with you?
You know how to fix it.
This is your chance.
Do you like sweet wine? And he does it with his very right, thick accent. Right. He's still in motion while he's sliding in front of the table.
Did somebody say sweet wine?
Yes. Good evening. May I assist you with a wine tonight?
Yeah, I'm having fish, so maybe a full-bodied red?
Well, I have the perfect wine for you. So he turns around without another word, and he literally starts to climb this wine case
right
up towards the top shelf. And he reaches up to the shelf, and all the wine that we're looking at has labels for the prices on all the bottles until he gets to this particular shelf.
I'll have a glass.
glass of your most expensive red wine mixed with a glass of your cheapest white wine served in a dog bowl.
He grabs this oddly shaped bottle of wine, sure, brings it, climbs back down, turns around,
1948,
and just pops the cork on it. Yeah. And so does he own this restaurant? Why are you allowed to do this?
Seems to be keeping it together.
What kind of monster orders red with fish? I know they're messing with me and it's just a test, but have some decency!
Give it to me, I sip it, tastes exactly like he says. I thought it'd be horrible, but it was great.
And bring some ice cubes. I like ice cubes in my red wine.
Waitress comes back to the table when he goes and disappears with a puff of smoke. Mm-hmm. She looks in this excited fashion. You know who that was? Enrico Bernardo. Then she waits for a reaction.
Rico Palazzo!
Like, hey, it's Enrico Palazzo!
More action. More excitement. More everything.
Bernstein and Golf.
Nope. Hubarkish and Anthony Herron.
Weekdays 1 to 6 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Get it right.
Boy, I'm flattered. They did some work on that. Nice job, guys. Yes, it is Anthony Herron and Hub Arker sitting in for Bernstein and Goff. We've got an hour in the books and four more to go with you here until 6 o'clock, and we are looking forward to visiting with you more than anything. 312-644-6767. We will pop in some great guests along the way. And this hour on The Score is brought to you by Townstone Financial. Anthony, as promised, Mike has been waiting on the line, so let's get back to him first. Mike, how you doing?
I'm great, Hub, and happy New Year to both of you guys.
Thank you.
I want to ask you, Hub, I'm kind of with you on Mitchell Trubisky. He had some flashes and some disappointments, given the circumstances that he was bestowed in front of him with receivers and injuries and things like that. I kind of think he's far exceeded the expectations of what I thought. But let me ask you a question. If Kevin White comes back next year and Kevin White has a breakout season, which I pray to God he does, but we don't know, but they get him some really good help at the wide receiver position, and he really, let's say he just takes a step back, where's the window with Mitchell Trubisky as far as a timeline of how much time? Would you give him two seasons after this to prove himself? And I'll just hang up and listen to you guys answer. Thanks a lot.
Well, the question is, how soon can you see good stuff as opposed to if you're not seeing it, how long do you wait for it? And so, you know, to this point, I think we've seen him continue to improve every week. And when you look at the leaps that both Carson Wentz and Jared Goff made from year one to year two, slightly different situations each. Wentz started 16 games, started from day one. As we said a little while ago, Goff didn't get the job until week 10, so he only started 7. Trubisky is going to be somewhere in between. He's going to end up with 12 starts. But I would think by the middle to the two-thirds mark of next season, he's got to be playing really good football. I think the rookie mistake excuses are gone at that point. You've seen enough. You've got 20 starts under your belt, and you should be ready to go. Now, they do continue to improve and grow after that, Anthony, as we know. I mean, it takes sometimes 3-4 years for you to have seen everything and really have a feel for everything. And they talk about where the game slows down. I asked Trubisky, I think it was 2 weeks ago, has the game started to slow down for you yet, the way everybody talks about it? And he said, it's interesting. Some plays, yes, and some plays, no.
Such an honest answer.
Yeah, he said there's some things that I'm starting to see that I'm really comfortable with, and I'm just reacting. And he said, but then every once in a while I'll see something, and I'm like, where did that come from? And I'll realize I saw it on tape 10 times this week, and I'm just, I'm still learning how to recognize that. So I think the answer to Mike's question is that you want to see Trubisky winning games because of his own decisions and his own arm by somewhere between the midpoint and the final quarter of next season.
And you look at Blake Bortles this year. You know, he's in his fourth year in Jacksonville, and it's a franchise that they've brought in the personnel to be able to put a great defense out there. They've drafted a quality running back, and he hasn't set the world on fire this entire season, but he's strung together some quality games. He's protected the football at times, put some nice stats out there, made some key plays when they've needed it. And he's in his fourth year now. Everyone would hope that Mitchell Trubisky wouldn't take until year four to help turn the Bears into a winner. But when you look at just the arc of a quarterback's development to fully base just the statistical side of whether or not their success or failure during the rookie season is missing the mark, because you want to see development. And as much as I have big questions on the way Dow Loggins puts game plans together and calls his sequences plays during the game, I believe he, John Fox, Ryan Pace, I like the way they handled the slow progression, the spoon feeding of Trubisky into the lineup, because I still, it stands out to me, that third preseason game, the first time he was in with the starters, and it was the Bears starters against the Titans backup, and there was a couple of series there where he could barely get the ball snapped, where Dow's literally yelling at him from the sideline, snap it, Mitchell! He was overwhelmed in some of those situations. And so to throw him out there opening day, how much can you expect the other players to have an opportunity to flourish when your quarterback can barely get the ball snapped? So give Mike Glennon a month, prove that your $18 million investment isn't going to get it done, and then you start to spoon feed the playbook to Trubisky. And I do believe you can see at this point that the game has started to slow down and that he's become far more decisive. He's certainly not a finished product, and this is not the end of where he needs to be as a quarterback. But to me, and I said this yesterday, I've not only seen enough tangibly, because the tangibles, I think, were fairly evident in the preseason, the mobility, more arm strength than maybe some of us anticipated. But to me, intangibly, the way he's interacting with teammates on the sideline, the way he handles the media in the Chicago pressure cooker, and the way he's responded to adversity in game situations, which to me is as important as anything for a top-picked quarterback. Have you seen? We've seen Deshaun Watson handle adversity. We saw Jared Goff handle adversity, things like that. Never really saw Trubisky have to handle adversity. We've seen him now have to handle and manage that as a pro. And that, to me, is what excites me as much as anything about the thought that, yeah, maybe they really do have something here.
All right, let's get to Bobby on the north side, who's been hanging on. Bobby, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Hob, I was going to talk to you. You were talking about most enticing jobs for potential head coaches. I think, honestly, that the Browns job, believe it or not, is very enticing because...
Please explain.
They finally got a decent GM. They've got two very high picks in each of the first two rounds. They got a ton of cap space. They got a lot of really good young talent that really just needs to be coached up. And, you know, you got two receivers. You got Gordon. If you can keep him on the straight and narrow, he's a heck of a receiver. And if Corey Coleman can realize his potential... I think any coach that, you know, is confident in his ability and can hire a decent staff, that's potentially, you know, they could turn things around out there.
Well, Bobby, thank you for the call. And you know, Anthony, I actually agree with Bobby that it is a good situation. I wouldn't call it one of the best jobs because it's still Cleveland. And that's not a shot at the city. I happen to like the city of Cleveland. I think it's a really nice place to visit, and I think it probably would be a nice place to live. And there's some great folks there. But when I say it's still Cleveland, you have the same ownership of that organization that created the mess in the first place. And it's that owner who is continuing to insist that Hugh Jackson's coming back. And that would obviously be a huge mistake. But where I think Bobby is right is there is some young talent. As a matter of fact, assuming that Joe Thomas comes back at 100%, they could have arguably one of the best offensive lines in football. They re-signed Joe Bitonio this year, their own drafted guard. And they brought in Kevin Zeitler on free agency, who was one of the best young guards in football. You know, I'd be careful with counting on Josh Gordon. I mean, he's missed three seasons with his troubles. And so, yeah. You know, the idea that that's suddenly all going to be behind him. But they've also got some interesting pieces on defense. I think the two first-round picks last year, Myles Garrett and Jabril Peppers, are going to be outstanding football players. They got a few other kids you kind of like there. A lot of work to do, but a ton of draft capital to do it with. And John Dorsey is an extremely qualified and good GM. And so, you know, maybe you're getting in on the ground floor of something that could turn pretty quickly because of all those draft picks they have.
We've rarely, by my estimation, seen this approach to this extent in the NFL. The, you know, tanking has become pretty in vogue in some of the other sports, and the acquisition of so many high draft picks over and over again. You know, at the top of last year's draft, some extremely physically capable players. You know, how quickly can some of these other young guys round into form? They took Deshaun Kizer in what was it, the second round? Yeah. They took him in last year, and he obviously hadn't been in a very good position, but they're going to have to continue to bring in competition at the quarterback position until they can find what they feel is the right guy. But there's plenty of draft picks. Cleveland's situation right now, I think, you know, nothing's impossible to turn around, and they at least have the things you need to be able to turn around, where there's young guys who are on the roster right now, and there's a lot of other young guys who they will have the ability to bring in with some of this draft capital that's been established. it confounds me a bit that they're not going to make a move from the sounds of it at head coach because of what they've seen. To me, like, it didn't surprise me the Jets decided they were going to extend Todd Bowles because we've seen success from him when there's been some resources there. And then the assumption was, well, they must be tanking this year with the way they sort of purged that roster. I think it was the right move by them to extend Todd Bowles despite the lack of success this year. Hugh Jackson, he's been a quality coordinator. It surprises me that he's going to get another year as the head coach in Cleveland.
Yeah, now you're right. That's what the owner has said. And John Dorsey finally said kind of tepidly last week, I expect Jackson back. I don't think Jackson's back. I think that'll change after Sunday. I think they said, I don't know about the owner, but I think Dorsey is saying what he has to say to keep the other players playing so that he can evaluate them and figure out where he wants to focus all that draft capital and whatever, you know, free agency cap space he wants to use. I don't know how you justify bringing back a 1-31 head coach. There's no way that none of the responsibility for that horrible performance doesn't come on Hugh Jackson. So, you know, we'll see. Let's get to Jim. We've got Joe Colley coming up in a minute, but Jim is our last caller hanging. So rather than leave you hanging, Jim, welcome to the program. How you doing?
Hi, fellas. How you been?
Good, thanks.
Great, Jim.
How much is it going to slow down Mitchell and the whole offense with a new coordinator, with all the new verbiage, all the new playbook, and it's going to affect Trubisky and the offensive line, the receivers, everybody? How much will that slow them down?
You know, Jim, I don't think it's a big deal. We talked so much about it with Jay Cutler because he had 7 coordinators in 8 years. That's a big deal. You never settle into a system. But Trubisky has been learning more about life in the NFL, about, you know, basic plays that are a staple of every offense, about working as mechanics, about commanding the huddle, about leadership, about taking snaps under center for the first time in his life. So I think the new system, and whoever is assuming there is a new offensive coordinator, will have the option of retaining some of the terminology and some of the scheme to keep it familiar to him. The problem I have, Anthony, is I've never become convinced that Dowell Loggins actually has a scheme. They just seem, and I don't mean to be a smart ass because Dowell's a good guy, but they just lurch from play to play. You know, they do different things in different situations where you would think they had developed tendencies, and they don't stay with their own tendencies. I think it'll actually be really good for Mr. Trubisky if they get the right guy, because he'll get an actual football philosophy. He'll get a scheme that can be defined, and then you'll get some consistency in some of the play calling within that philosophy to make it work.
And there's so much learning that happens early in your career, and so you're going to be responsible for consuming large quantities of information when you're a young football player in the NFL, especially when you're a young quarterback, and it's nothing insurmountable, especially at this point in his development, because he essentially came in as this bare canvas. You know, even from college, he didn't have a lot of tendencies that he was able to develop in college, because he really didn't play that much collegiate football either. So he came in with the ability to be a blank slate that they could start to mold. They haven't molded him to any complete fashion at this point. So he's not this veteran with habits, bad habits that have to be broken to suit the next coach, the next regime that comes in. So I think he's going to be in great shape.
All right, folks, this segment was brought to you by ADT. Home isn't just a place. It's the feeling of knowing you're safe and lets you take the feeling with you. Learn more at ADT.com.
Shot clock at 5. Back to Courtney Lee. Lee accelerates. He fires. That won't go. Porzingis knocked down. It's 5-4. Markkanen ducks the ball.
The finisher.
We do. We work on that play, that throw ahead to the rim runner every day. That's the first thing that we do in our script offense. Then we throw ahead to the wing and attack and throw it to the opposite corner. But that is one of the things that we work on every day is throwing that throw ahead pass. So I'm glad we can complete it at obviously a crucial time in the game.
That was the stuff by Lauri Markkanen on Tuesday night to complete the big comeback to finally get the lead over the Knicks in the final minute of the game. And then head coach Fred Hoiberg talking about that play. It actually was a plan. It's something they look to do. The Chicago Bulls are certainly a huge story locally. I don't know if it's become a big deal yet nationally, but they were supposed to be tanking. They were doing a great job of it at 3-20. And then Superman, Nico Miritic, comes back to the lineup.
the savior.
Yeah, suddenly they're 9-2, and Nico sees himself as the center of the basketball world. And here to talk about it, my favorite NBA guest. He is also a huge Steelers fan. We'll let him get to that in a few minutes. But first, we got to get some knowledge on what the hell's going on with the Chicago Bulls, Joe. They weren't supposed to do this.
They're blowing this rebuild, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are.
Rebuild up. No, it's been, you know, like you brought up Nico's name, obviously, in the introduction. You know, I think that's been part of the perfect storm. I think it's been a lot of things. I think first and foremost, you have guys that are finally buying into Fred Hoiberg's system, listening to the coach, not feeling like – I mean, that team that he inherited 2 years ago was a disaster. It was a civil war going on within with, you know, Jimmy and Powell in one corner and Joakim and Derek in the other. And that were – I don't know if any coach could have fixed that. I mean, they needed a psychiatrist at that point, not a coach. And then last year's team, you know, you just – you gave Fred – every possible player that doesn't fit in his offense. And, you know, and I don't think he's an elite coach where, you know, to me there's five or six guys that are elite coaches where he can just, whatever players you have, he can coach them up. There's not a lot of guys that can do that in the NBA, and I think Fred needed specific type players, specific makeup. And we're actually finally seeing in year three that this guy can coach a little bit. He's got the respect of the room. He's got the ears of the room. These guys are legitimately playing hard for him, which is a key, that probably the first box you check in that rebuild. Are they playing hard? Are they playing with effort on a nightly basis? So you go ahead and check that box. And the problem is no one thought, you know, you don't see young guys. I mean, hell, Philadelphia still has problems closing games and winning games. You don't see young guys. That's something that comes later. You know, unfortunately for the front office that would like to tank this season, it's coming quicker, whether it's marketing on one night or Chris Dunn especially, or Nico. And so I think now they have to kind of walk things back, and I think that's why come mid-January when Nico's eligible to be traded and February as the deadline appears, you'll see them make every step possible to go ahead and reset the market to what they felt they should be in wins and losses, and you'll see guys like Nico and Robin Lopez and maybe even Holiday traded.
Joe, of course, is Joe Colley. He covers the Chicago Bulls for the Chicago Sun-Times. You can also hear him pretty regularly here at 670 The Score. You can follow Joe on Twitter at SunTimes_Hoops. And, Joe, your latest piece about Nico suddenly demanding the basketball, it's really kind of a fascinating story, going right back to, quote, the punch and all that has happened since. You can see Portis and Mirotić interacting perfectly reasonably on the floor, chest bumping, high-fiving, both into the game. But as I understand it, off the floor, it is still quite frigid. And that pretty much points straight at Nico. Portis has certainly indicated a desire to let bygones be bygones. But it's interesting that, at least from the outside looking in, it seems they haven't really, you know, made up or settled anything, but they're just meshing on the basketball floor together.
Yeah, and I think that's the life that Nico wants with Bobby. And I think that's why, you know, privately Nico still would like to be elsewhere. And look, I will credit him for this. There was only one way that he could have played this whole scenario where it works out, where he's in a win-win, and he did just that. He had to not only come back, say the right things publicly, show that he can be a good teammate publicly by the fist pumps and the you know, the chesting of, you know, the bumping of the chest and communicating on the floor with Bobby Portis, the guy that basically ruined the start of his season. I mean, when you think about it, I mean, he was named the starter. It was going to be a big year for him, not only to showcase what he can do, but showcase the new body, the new build, the new muscle, the new post-up game. I mean, there was a lot riding on year four for him. That was taken away from him. With that punch. So to not only be able to come in, show that for other teams, play well so other teams now notice you and they didn't notice you in the summer when you were a restricted free agent, and on top of that, still have these comments that are very truthful, but at the same time, don't endear you to your teammates or your front office enough where they say, we got to get this guy the hell out of here. And so I think he's played it perfectly. I don't know if someone got in his ear or if he came up with this, but I mean, even after the game the other night, you know, Casey Johnson from the Tribune and I are talking to Nico, and you know, Nico prefaced it by saying, you know, obviously I was glad we got the win, but if we wouldn't have got that win, I would have been a lot angrier. I need more than four shots. And these guys got to know how to find me in the post. I mean, New York played him deny the entire game. I mean, they were switching and keeping denial passes out of his hands. I mean, they were blitzing him on pick and roll, pick and pop. They were playing him as much as I've seen the team game plan towards him. But he said, no, I was down in the post, and they got to be able to find me there too. So, again, you know, I actually talked to Denzel about this after the shoot-around today, and guys notice what he's saying. They understand why he's saying it, but they're not taking it to heart. So they're handling, I think, as well as they can too. But there's no secret that at some point the front office has to hope that his value continues to climb, which puts them in a perfect situation. I mean, at the beginning of the year, before the punch, best case scenario, maybe you get a late second round pick for this guy. Maybe. Now you could possibly see teams like Washington, Oklahoma City, teams like that that actually need that stretch four, and he's as good as it gets right now as far as stretch fours that are available on the market. You might get that mid to late first round, which no one thought would happen. So in that way, the rebuild is going a lot better than people think when they just look at the standings and say, they're not even tanking this right. I mean, they could actually walk this thing back and start losing more games by making more moves.
And I'm kind of hoping every time Nico discusses anything about himself schematically or otherwise, he just continues to do it in the third person. Like, they must feed Nico the ball. You know, Nico must get the ball in the post.
You know what's funny is the third person guy used to be Bobby Portis. And now all of a sudden Nico's taking that role. And I don't know if it's coincidence or, again, if that's part of the whole Nico plot to get himself out of Chicago. But I think it's been genius the way he's handled things. I really have. And, you know, I'm a guy that likes a little anarchy. So I'm not opposed to him, being very truthful, saying what's on his mind, but at the same time, maybe doing it with a certain agenda to it.
Well, and after the preseason incident of the broken face, I mean, the assumption immediately was that there's no way Bobby and Nico can coexist on the court ever again. And so now we've actually seen that take place, despite what many of us may have thought. Is there any scenario where Nico could finish this contract as a Bull? Is there any scenario where that maybe even makes sense if he continues playing at this level?
If there is surprisingly no value or he starts playing poorly, they have the team option on him for next year, so they wouldn't exercise that option. So I think he would play this year out. But again, that's why he is a great piece for a team to add, because it's a team option for next year. Now, that option may change if he's traded. That hasn't been made clear yet if that is in his contract. I mean, he obviously had a no-trade put in that he's willing to waive, and I reported the other day that is still out there, that he is still willing to waive it. So would that no-trade or would that that player option become his option? Is that worked into the deal? That is kind of the unknown right now. But either way, it's still a very manageable contract. And, you know, whether you're renting him for the rest of this year or you have him for the rest of this year and next year, you know, you're getting a guy with a certain skill set that is wanted in today's NBA. So, but again, it's all prefaced on he has to continue to play well. If he continues to play at this level, and not just scoring, I mean, he's doing a lot of things.
Right.
If you watch his defense, and you know, obviously we get a better view of kind of what's going on away from the camera and stuff like that. But just some in the New York game and the game before that, in Milwaukee, he had two just blitzes on pick and rolls where they double teamed a guy where he forced bad passes. And he's done that. I think he got away with like three or four in each game. And it's just body positioning. It's understanding it. And more than ever for Nico, it's a want to play defense, which I don't think he had previously. I think he thought, you know, I'm coming to America. I'm a stretch four. I'm going to do what the other Euro stretch fours do. And I think he finally figured out that isn't working. So we're seeing a guy that probably got a lot of things in the off season as far as how the game should be played and is utilizing them. And it's good to see him. I mean, he's an all around basketball player now, which I never would have attached to Nico Maricic, you know, his first year, second year, and maybe even last year.
Joe, one more before we got to run. You know, Nico's a big story, but he's really not the only story, and maybe not even the most important story for the Bulls. Yeah, they set out to tank, but they didn't set out to lose the Jimmy Butler trade. And we haven't even seen Zach LaVine yet, who's the key piece of the trade. But Chris Dunn has certainly been a revelation. Apparently, he's a little better basketball player than Thibs thought he was.
Yeah, and it wasn't. I don't think it was a Thibs thing. I mean, you look at the minutes he got. Everyone thinks that he didn't play last year. Look at his minutes in the games played.
he played a lot. He just didn't produce. And, you know, I think there was a learning curve for him. He's obviously shown, you know, there's a much longer leash when you're on a rebuild and a team with other young guys. So he can make mistakes now, play through them, and learn from where he might not have had that last year. That's been key. And, yeah, and Zach LaVine's going to be – he's going to be a problem for opposing teams. You play pick and pop and pick and roll with him and Lauri Markkanen, and, you know, good luck. Good luck on who you're going to switch to and how you're going to play that. So, you know, they're excited about where he is. He starts tomorrow, six straight practices of full contact. If he makes it through then, they're going to sit down and reassess after that time period and decide if they are going to give him a couple games with the Windy City Bulls or if they're going to throw him right in the mix with the big boys. So, big week for him coming up. As long as he has no setbacks, you know, we could be seeing him within the next couple weeks.
All right, Joe, how confident are you that AB will be back for a divisional playoff game? Those calves are tough things to mess with.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that was unfortunate. And, you know, I don't even feel like really talking about what happened a couple weeks ago because it's just such a, you know, when you have a dictator of a commissioner. And I don't even feel like getting into it because Bears fans don't want to hear about my problems. They really don't.
Well, I think you're talking about two things. Joe's a huge Steelers fan. We always talk a little bit about Steelers, but you're also talking about issues that bother NFL fans everywhere. You would think there'd be an easier way to figure out what a catch is and what a catch isn't and stop taking away catches.
But, you know, when push came to shove, there was only one team man enough to step up and say no on the CBA of giving this scumbag complete absolute power. And you know, I don't want to get into conspiracy theories, but it seems like that team has been punished more than any other team since that CBA was made public of which team said no. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
One team is smarter than the other teams. Well, that's all I know.
They show that with all their rings, too. So I guess, I guess we know what we're talking about. Joe, listen, have a great holiday. Enjoy the Bulls beat, whichever way it goes. Enjoy the wins or enjoy the losses, whatever they're going to finally get right. That is Joe Colley of the Chicago Sun-Times. A great read all the time. Follow him on Twitter at @SunTimes_Hoops. We are going to take a very quick break and get a scoreboard update. We're going to get the scoreboard update first, and then we're going to take a very quick break right here at 670 The Score.
Scoreboard update.
From the Chicago Wolves Update Studio, I'm Rick Hamm. The Chicago Wolves rate better than 4 stars on Yelp, TripAdvisor, and Ticketmaster. Be there Saturday as the Wolves host Rockford at Allstate Arena and see why they rate so high. Tickets start at just $11. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. The Cubs will have a different closer in 2018 because Wade Davis signed a 3-year, $52 million deal with the Rockies. Davis had 32 saves and 12 strikeouts per nine for the Cubs in 2017. While the Cubs are working towards the start of next year, the Bears had their final practice of the 2017 season today at Halas Hall. Josh Sitton and Bobby Massey both missed practice and are doubtful for Sunday's game against the Vikings. You'll hear from Ian Rappaport on the Bears coaching situation at the top of the hour. There will be one less coaching job opening up in the NFL. The Jets have given 2-year extensions to coach Todd Bowles and GM Mike Maccagnan. On the ice, the Blackhawks will try to snap a 3-game losing streak tonight in Edmonton. They'll be doing it without Artem Anisimov, who left last night's game with an upper body injury. Trending in the other direction are the Red Hot Bulls, winners of 9 of 11, who host the Pacers tonight at the UC. The Pacers will be without their leading scorer, Victor Oladipo, who has a sore right knee. Bowl season today, Northwestern takes on Kentucky in the Music City Bowl in about an hour. Right now, Wake Forest leads Texas A&M in the Belk Bowl 38-35 in the third. AHL tonight, the Wolves are in Milwaukee taking on the Admirals. The update's brought to you by Toyota of Naperville. Visit toyotaofnaperville.com today. And mullionhanley.com is brought to you by local GEICO agent Tim Calcagno at 630-671-0600. I'm Rick Camp, and you're listening to the home for the Built Ford Tough Bears Mondays, breaking down the Bears-Vikings game. Listen throughout the day to Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score for the latest on a Bears coaching change. This is 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
This scoreboard update was brought to you by Lexus of Naperville.
It's back, the annual Lexus of Naperville.
The best-kept secret for luxury and safety? Volvo. The best-kept secret to obtain a Volvo? Howard Orloff Volvo Cars. Howard Orloff Volvo has been proudly serving Chicagoland for over 55 years. And did you know, at Howard Orloff Volvo, during Volvo's Sweden's Greetings holiday sales event, you can get special year-end pricing, finance, and lease offers on all remaining 2017 models. And did you know, you can lease a new 2017 Volvo S90 T6 for $469 a month for 36 months with no down payment, or buy for $47,988.
Plus, come in and experience the exciting all-new 2018 Volvo XC60. Isn't it time you get to know Howard Orloff Volvo Cars? Visit Howard Orloff Volvo, just off the Kennedy at Armitage, or online at howardorloffvolvo.com.
Demonstrator, stock number V02835. First month's payment plus tax, title, license, and doc fee due at signing with approved credit. No security deposit. See dealer for details.
This is Andrew Bogish with a CBS Sports Minute brought to you by Cremo Shaving Cream's Superior Beard Products, Beard Proudly. Playing time is a coach's most precious commodity. Players have to earn it. If they get it but don't deserve it, it can compromise a coach's message. As the NFL regular season hits its final weekend, multiple fan bases want to see what they have in young backup QBs before the draft and free agency. The Chiefs will play Patrick Mahomes Sunday with the AFC West wrapped up. They can protect Alex Smith before the playoffs and give the rookie some important snaps in case he has to play in January, but only because Mahomes has shown he deserves to be on an NFL field. If your team is keeping that young QB on the sidelines, it's not being short-sighted, overprotective. It means the young man's not ready to play, which might not be what you want to hear. I'm Andrew Bogish.
Champagne is a must for every holiday party. Not just any bottle will do. Celebrate in style and good taste with Tattinger Champagne. Known for its excellent taste and quality, Tattinger will impress your friends and family this holiday season. From Brut Le Francais to Prestige Rosé to Comte de Champagne, you'll find your perfect taste. Whether you're the host of the party, a guest, or just planning a quiet celebration at home, Tattinger is the ideal choice. Purchase Tattinger Champagne at Chicagoland Grocery and Fine Wine and Spirits retailers this holiday season. It's Tattinger time.
Fill your cart with color.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
I would imagine at some point that when Pace makes the hire, that there will be something to say, all right, we want to make sure that both of you guys are here long term.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Anthony Herron, Hub Arkush with you until 6 o'clock this evening. We are talking sports, any sport you like. We've got some ongoing conversation about the Bears head coaching and quarterback situations. We did just take a break there to visit with Joe Cowley about the Chicago Bulls. If you want to talk some more Bulls hoops, that's great as well. They are fascinating. Won 9 of their last 11. It's, they're doing a lousy job of trying to be the worst team in the NBA.
I mean, where they were clinging to that playoff streak for so many years and holding off, just kind of stiff-arming the idea that maybe they should tank, maybe they should rebuild, whatever the case may be. Now that they've finally chosen that lane, they're not getting that how they want to get it either.
It's such a strange phenomenon because I'm trying to think that the whole issue of tanking has become a conversation about professional sports. And we heard it more first in the NBA than baseball, but now we've heard it so much in baseball because of the Astros, the Cubs, the White Sox going through it now. A bunch of other organizations, the Pirates, they tried tanking for 20 years before they finally got to the playoffs and then couldn't win a wild card game, and now it looks like they're going to have to start again. So, you know, it's really interesting to see the situation where, you know, they are struggling to be bad enough, and I don't think I've ever seen this happen before. Usually it is not that hard to be bad.
How would you define the difference between a tank and a rebuild? Because rebuild has been around for a long time. Folks have been rebuilding for generations, but the tank is different.
Well, I think what it is with rebuild, you put your best young players out there and you do everything you can to help them compete as best as possible. And, you know, if you win games, that's a good thing because it's viewed as developing your players. Whereas with a tank, the whole idea is to be as bad as you can be so that you get the first draft pick and so that you pick first. In the NBA, it's only two rounds. But I think what complicated it from the beginning is the Bulls didn't just unload the roster. They didn't sell players. They didn't drop expiring contracts with guys that they released immediately. They traded their best player for two really promising young players and a lottery pick in Lauri Markkanen. And they've ended up with what looks like three pretty good players in Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen, and you know they and now they're going to add Zach LaVine, right. And it's hard not to win with those guys, you know, so they're good.
And suddenly it appears that perhaps Fred Hoiberg is actually has won over the locker room. And that to me was one of the biggest questions coming in, because now that the veteran influence, now that there's no Dwayne Wade, no Joakim Noah, and Joe Cowley touched on that just a couple of minutes ago with us, now Fred Hoiberg has for the first time been empowered by this organization, and you can tell feels empowered within the locker room with the way he interacts with the players, with the way that he knows they're actually willing to listen to him and take direction from him. Doesn't automatically mean that he's a great coach or that whatever they are now, 11-22, means that the Bulls' turnaround has certainly begun, but it does mean to me that this is his first legitimate opportunity for us to evaluate what is Fred Hoiberg when he actually has control as a head coach, because there were so many veterans here who frankly just outranked him before, that he wasn't able to actually take control of this franchise before this season.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting, the comment Joe made. I knew there was a Mason-Dixon line in that locker room, but I didn't realize the way they were paired off. I didn't realize it was Butler and Powell versus Joakim and Derek. I knew that, you know, Noah and Rose were close. They grew up together here on the team. But I didn't realize where Gasol fit in that whole thing. So not that it matters anymore.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, I watched this team and I like Markkanen a lot.
Yeah.
I think Dunn's played well. And just from watching Levine when he was with Minnesota, I mean, he's a legitimate all-star, you know? So, you know, maybe we should have realized it was going to be a little harder for them to tank.
I would draw a parallel. You know, we were both football guys, and some of the things I was saying earlier a little while ago about Trubisky, the intangible things that we've all been able to observe about him in the way he's working to improve, the whole first to leave, or first to show up, last to leave kind of thing, that he has that sense about him. And he also seems to be perturbed by the lack of success that's been there. That to me is a good thing. You know, he's not just coming out here just saying the complete sort of PC answers. He's down on himself when it doesn't go well. He's very honest, like some of the questions you mentioned that you've asked him about the progress that's beginning to come that hasn't fully been realized yet. And I see some of those things in Lowry Markkanen, and, you know, he played at Arizona, and I'm a Pac-12 network guy with a lot of my football coverage. So as soon as the Bulls drafted him, and I watched Pac-12 hoops, but as soon as the Bulls drafted him, I talked to some of the Pac-12's analysts and play-by-play guys who called Arizona games, you know, a number of times over the season that Markkanen had with them. Things they were pointing out to me about him as he came over from Finland, he made that decision that he wanted to come and spend a year playing high-level basketball in the United States before going to the NBA, because he'd known for a while he was going to be an NBA prospect, but he wanted to go to a program that had, as Sean Miller does, a very regimented approach, almost a professional brand of practice schedule, a focus on details, and to play in a very competitive conference like he was able to do for a program that's been one of the preeminent in the country for a while now in Arizona. And physically, his dimensions have continued to shape and shift. He was a guy who, while he hasn't been in the weight room that much yet, he was able to go to some of these camps and combines as he's been evaluated by different people. And, you know, in football, they use 225 on the bench. In basketball, they use 185. He's able to rep out 185 at a pretty good clip. So he's a guy for a 7-footer with fairly long arms. And we know he's obviously got the range as a shooter and some of those things. But he does want to be a physical player. He does want to be competitive on the defensive end. And so where Joe Cowley was talking to us about how, you know, Nico sort of just developed that now that he knows the mortality of his career may be facing him. Lowry Markkanen seems to be entering the NBA with that mentality.
Yeah, and let's be clear, folks. Nobody here, not me, not Anthony, is saying, oh, man, the Bulls are close. Maybe they can contend. Maybe they're going to win a play. No. They're just not awful is right. What we're saying. And they can't be awful because they have, it appears, a little too much talent to be awful. So let's get to Oak Park where Kevin is on the line. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for taking my call, and you guys are doing great filling in today. I've really enjoyed listening to you. So,
thank you.
My biggest concern is that even with Levine coming back and being an all-star, and with Markkanen developing into a great player, and Dunn at least showing he can probably start and be a upper-tier point guard, is that this Bulls team is still a major superstar draft pick away from being competitive for a title in the future.
Maybe two.
And all these winning games is throwing away their chances at one of the most stacked drafts we've seen from the top four players that are available. And I just don't want them to end up like the Atlanta Hawks of the last 10 years, where they're always a 3 or 4 seed, but nowhere near year getting over the hump. So I want to know, outside of the obvious, you know, Nico and maybe Lopez, who else you think could be on the trading block for the Bulls, and who some of those potential trade partners could be. I've heard the Lakers trying to move Luol Deng's contract, or the Celtics maybe looking at Lopez for their pick-and-roll offense. Just wanted to hear your thoughts, and thanks for taking my call again. Happy New Year.
Well, you know, Kevin, we live with the assumption that you can only get that player with the first one or two picks. You know, certainly Steph Curry wasn't one of the first one or two picks. I understand that in basketball it is a lot more predictable, and usually that's where that guy comes. I didn't realize this until the other night, but the lottery will work the same way for one more year, where even though, you know, Derrick Rose was, what, the 1.3% chance, the Bulls hit it and they got Derrick Rose. As long as they're in that bottom eight or bottom 10 or whatever, they're going to be in the pool for one more year. And there is a lot of basketball left to play, and I think they're still capable of losing a lot of games. You know,
which
now,
they will.
Yeah, whether they're going to have the worst or one of the two worst records in the NBA, that kind of seems unlikely at this point, because they're going to get better when LaVine comes back. I don't think they're going to get worse. It may take them a couple weeks to figure out the rotation and where everybody fits. But, you know, Kevin, it's a valid concern, and that's where we get to this whole issue of, are they screwing up tanking? That's kind of the question coming in. And, you know, Anthony, I think the answer is, yeah, they kind of are, you know?
That's what one of my old, my high school football coach, a guy named Phil Acton, played at Bowling Brook, and he used to, whenever he'd got be ragging on us about something, he'd say, you screw up a junkyard. Mm-hmm. That's essentially what this is. The Bulls were supposed to be a junkyard this season, and in a way, they're screwing up the junkyard that we expected, that a lot of us hoped they would be able to become. To Kevin's question about, you know, who the trade bait may be, I mean, you know, you need to have a willing partner on the other end of that trade, and you need to have someone who's viewed as a commodity to get anything worthwhile in return. And so that's why the potential trade conversation tends to center around Nico Mirotić for the level he's playing at, and for the likelihood that he, one, doesn't want to continue with the Bulls, and two, wouldn't be a part of their long-term plans anyway. And Robin Lopez, if you're looking for the stretch four, if you're looking for the center, these are guys who've got, you know, real resumes in the NBA that someone would be willing to try and go get, who you can actually get value in return for, and they're old enough where they don't need to be a part of the long-term plans for the Bulls.
Yeah, and the answer is, you're not going to be able to trade with another team with a lotto pick, period, because they're doing the same thing. They're trying to get to those guys, you know. But if we're really talking about getting maximum value in a trade to have more assets to get a high pick, whether it's a 8 or a 10 or a 12 in the first round, I think the answer is actually fairly obvious. We just don't want to talk about it. You may have to take one of these current assets and package it in a trade with Mirotic. You may, they're not going to trade LaVine, but you know, if you really want to get a solid pick or get, you know, more talent, you may have to package Dunn or Markkanen with Mirotic, and it's not. But this is where you have to make these choices, you know, because people, they want to suck, they want to have the top pick, but they don't want to give up any of their good players. Well, you can't have it both ways, you know. I mean, the expression I always heard was similar to yours. It wasn't a junkyard. It was, a guy could screw up a one-car funeral, you know. and then there's the other, you know, as long as we've got every cliche in the books here, and then there's the old one about having your cake and eating it too, okay? If you want LaVine and Markkanen and Dunn to be great players, you're not going to get another lotto pick. That's kind of, well, you'll get a lotto pick, but you're not going to get one of the top two or three in the draft. That's kind of the unfortunate reality of it. This segment is brought to you by Dell. Dell's small business advisors help you get the right solution. Get up to 35% off select business PCs with Intel Core processors through December. Visit Dell.com/small business or call 877-BUY-DELL. That's 877-BUY-DELL. And we'll get right back to the phones. And now we're going to switch over to some football talk, I think, Anthony, because Jordan was up next. Jordan's up in Wakanda. Jordan, how you doing?
Good, guys. Happy New Year.
Thank you, Sam.
Happy New Year, Jordan.
Yeah, thanks. You know, obviously going into next year, I think it's clear that there's an area of focus for the Bears to be wide receivers. You know, I'm just curious, you know, there was a lot of potential around Cam Meredith, obviously with his early season injury. I haven't heard too much about how his rehab is going, and the injury that he's had, do you know if it's going to affect his speed, cutting on any routes? What is the lookout for him for next year and what the Bears might expect out of him, and how do we know how his rehab is going?
All right, Jordan, my understanding, Cam had an ACL tear, but he did not tear the PCL and the MCL that sometimes go with it, which is when you're talking about a complete reconstruction. So it's still serious. It's still a 8 to 10 month rehab, but it's always better if you don't tear the other ligaments along with the ACL. So he didn't have a complete tear. Everything I've heard is that he's on schedule, that the rehab is going fine because of the timing of it in training camp. There's no way that he was ever getting back. I mean, the reality is some guys who really get after it and get out in front of it by January, February, they start to look pretty good. But in his case, that doesn't do you any good, so there's no sense in rushing it. So, but everything I've heard is that the rehab is going fine, that he should be 100% for training camp, and that it was just the ACL. It was not the complete tear of the knee.
And for Meredith, you know, he's a guy who's, he's not necessarily your speedy nine route type of receiver anyway. You know, you certainly want him to regain the full scope of his physical abilities, but part of what made him really impressive was his willingness, his ability to be physical in his route running, to make contested catches. So, you know, if he did lose a half a step, which I'd be surprised if he did, he's a young guy and it's a fairly at this point common injury that a lot of major surgeons are more than capable of repairing at a high level. But, you know, if you were talking about perhaps one of these, you know, more of a speedy slot receiver type, you know, a guy who's more working in and out of cuts and in and out of breaks, you know, through the middle of a defense, you know, perhaps a Marcus Wheaton or a Brandon Cooks type, then that may be something that's a little more of a concern. But I'd say for a guy like Cam Meredith, you know, if he's got his size, his physicality, and assuming his knee gets back even close to what it was before, I don't see where it should be anything that would be a concern for holding him back for the type of player he was.
All righty, let's go out to Sycamore and bring Joe into the show. Joe, how you doing?
Hey, Happy New Year, Hob.
Thank you, same to you.
Is there a formula right now that says what our picks might be? I mean, as far as 5th through the 8th, after these games are through this weekend, I'd like to know which one we might be in. This management we're doing, are they going to pick the best available athlete or by need for position? Because if there's somebody like the running back from Penn State still there, and if we don't need a running back, but he's pretty darn good, I'd like to hear your viewpoint on that, Tom.
All righty, Joe. Yeah, the formula is predetermined. You've got a situation where, you know, the Bears are at 5-10, so they're tied with the other 5-10 teams, which I believe right now is Denver and San Francisco. The Broncos have won, I'm sorry, the 49ers have won 4 straight. They had the one win. I think they're the 3 5-10 teams, and I think that would have them.
The Jets, 5-10.
The Jets are focused. There's 4 of them. Sadly, the Bears are going to pick last of all the 5-10 teams because they've had one of the most difficult schedules in the NFL. And the way it works is if you have the same record, they take all the teams in that group, and then they rank you in order of difficulty of schedule, with the least difficult schedule picking the highest. And of course, the theory there is even though you both only won 5 games, the Bears beat or competed against better teams. That's the theory. I'm not saying if it's fair or not. So
dang
right,
AFC North.
Yeah, right now, I didn't look after Sunday, but going into Sunday, and I projected the Bears would have a win, it would have had them picking 8th. So I think they're going to end up somewhere around 8 or 9, although they will get beat this Sunday, and I don't know who the other teams are playing, so that could help a little bit. But they're probably sitting right now in that 6 to 9 range, and they're going to trend towards the bottom of that group because they have played, they actually threw last week had played the most difficult schedule in the NFL, and there were only a couple teams that were close. Washington was a close second, and then I want to say the Patriots were actually a distant third, but then they played Cleveland, and so that puts a dramatic change in your percentage because, of course, beating an 0-15 team not only gives, or 0-14 team not only gives you the win, but it significantly weakens the combined record of the other opponents, which is how they do that.
Just shows how different the draft process is between football and basketball, where we were just talking about the Bulls and trying to see what they could do to put themselves in as strong a position as possible to get a lottery pick in this next NBA draft, or who knows, maybe even the next couple of NBA drafts. Still no guarantees with that because you're still dealing with lottery balls. And even once the NBA moves on from the current format. I believe there's still thought to be a lottery ball format in there, but it's just not
if you were teams. You can't finish seventh, eighth, ninth and still have a crack. I think it's going to be restricted to the top four, as I recall.
And so the lottery process will condense, but in the NFL, you know, if you're really bad, then you are going to be slotted towards the top of the NFL draft. But for the Bears to pick towards the bottom of the top 10, we've seen them here before. You know, there's going to be talent the caliber of a Leonard Floyd who's there. To me, what I've seen from Ryan Pace over and over again is that he does, by my estimation, veer more towards the developmental talent, not a guy who you would expect to come in day one and be a force. And it's maybe, when you look at this, the full scope of how many players get drafted, yes, it's rare that a rookie would come in and be a force from day one, especially so if we exclude the quarterback position. If you're drafting a receiver, if you're drafting a defensive lineman, if you're drafting an offensive lineman, you know, there's positions where you hope, especially when you're drafting that high, that you're drafting someone who can essentially plug and play. Should improve throughout their career, but someone who can make an immediate impact. And that's not who Ryan Pace has drafted within the first couple of rounds in any of the drafts he's been in.
Yeah, that's the other answer to your question. What Ryan has tended to do since he got here, we call him a traits guy. He definitely likes athletes. You don't have to be a finished product. But what he's done is, for the most part, with his first pick, he's drafted the best athlete available in a position of need. Because when he took Kevin White at 7, a lot of people knew that was too high. He was developmental. But he was the second best wide receiver in that class, and he was the second wideout off the board, and they had a huge need. Then when he came back for Leonard Floyd was another developmental prospect, could be a home run, needed some work. They desperately needed a pass rusher, and he was not the most finished product, but he was potentially the best pass rusher available. And then once again this year, went with the lesser known but better testing athlete in Mitch Trubisky at that area of need, which is quarterback. But then as he's gotten into later rounds, I mean, I thought Jonathan Bullard out of Florida was a great third round pick, because this is a guy who played like a first rounder,
right,
but didn't have the athleticism or the traits in college that made him a first rounder. And so getting him in the third rounder, in the third round, I should say, Pace got a real good prospect, a real good athlete, based on production. So I think he does a little bit of both. I think he's best athlete available early, and then more best, most productive college player, perhaps most dependable product in areas of need in the later rounds. But he's the one thing I like about Ryan, or one of the things, he's not a pure need guy at any level. I don't like guys who just go need and say, I'm going to take the best. So, you know, when you look at, Joe mentioned Saquon Barkley from Penn State, who may in fact be a great NFL running back, you need playmakers desperately. And the only two you've got on offense right now other than Trubisky are your two running backs, Howard and Cone. So it's a safe bet that regardless of where they've got Saquon Barkley on the board, he's not going to be their pick with the seventh, eighth, or ninth pick. He's not going to get drafted that high anyway. He's a good football player, but he's not going to be a top 10 pick.
Has Kendall Wright done enough for you to stick around?
He's, Shane, he's done enough to go to camp with me again. He doesn't have a roster spot locked up. I mean, they're going to bring in a lot of wide receivers. So, people ask the question, Anthony, why didn't they do more to address the wide receiver position in the draft? Well, they had used a seventh overall pick on Kevin White, who they were counting on going to camp. They had had this breakthrough campaign from their own priority free agent, an undrafted rookie free agent in Cam Meredith. And then they brought in a ton of wide receivers, but they went with veterans to compete at the position. They signed free agents Marcus Wheaton, Victor Cruz, Reuben Randall, Kendall Wright, and they didn't expect them all to make it when they signed them, but that was how they were going to address it. They also
didn't expect them all to get hurt either.
Yeah, and they had this unnatural love affair with Josh Bellamy, which I don't understand, because Josh Bellamy's been around since 2012. Deontay Thompson was another one. Guys are great special teams players, but I think, in 5 years you can figure out if a guy's a receiver or not, and they're not. Josh Bellamy is never going to make a living as a receiver in the NFL, and yet he keeps coming back and taking one of those roster spots. Now, he is an excellent special teamer, and you need to, to focus on that as well. But they will absolutely address the receiver position this year, and my guess is they'll do it the same way the Rams did. They'll probably draft one or two in the middle rounds. They'll look at free agency. A lot of that is being in the right place at the right time and getting the right fit. And they could trade for one, much like the Rams did for it was Woods as a free agent, and it was Sammy Watkins that they traded for. So it just depends on who's available and what's out there.
And a question just came in on the text line from the 847. Do you bring Kevin White back to camp? I don't know why you wouldn't. You still, you know, you retain his rights. There's no reason not to bring him into camp. You know, there's not going to be anyone else interested in trading for him. He doesn't have a trade market available. He's been injured his entire career. And in the limited time he's been on the field, he doesn't look like he's developed yet either. So there's not going to be some other suitor where you get something in return. So there's no reason not to bring him into camp. But I'm certainly not, I'm not hopeful that suddenly in what I believe will be, what, his fourth year in the NFL, that he will, A, stay healthy, and that he will be, if he is healthy, look like a top-flight NFL receiver.
Yeah, you know, at this point, you've got a significant investment in him, both in draft capital and what you've paid him, and it costs you nothing to bring him to camp. If you cut him before the final cutdown, you literally don't owe him anything, so it'd be crazy not to. I will tell you, Anthony, what is disturbing to me.